Yeah, the Lord has put a word on my heart, and I'm glad you all are here. I was kind of curious how many people would be here on Labor Day weekend, because, you know, it's like, oh, that's the weekend to go and do camping and all that stuff. And I was thinking about the opportunity that this is, just to come and share a word, and then also the responsibility of saying, well, do I have a word? And is it worth your time? Is it worth coming to listen? And the Lord gave me something that it's a little difficult for me to introduce this subject because I don't know what I'm doing with it. It's a lot easier to come up and say, this is what I've learned, and so this is how you do it. Because I do try to learn. I go after it. I want to learn. And when I tell you I've learned this, I'm not faking it. I have struggled to learn it, and I have the scars to prove it. So when I have a message like that, I feel like it's something that can, I know it can impact you. When I don't know what I'm doing, I know that the message will impact you, but it's going to impact me as well. And I really don't know what to expect this morning. So I'm speaking out of my lack. And I want to tell you how the Lord showed me this, because, I mean, if you think about it, the Lord loves us. He loves each one of us. And those that he loves, he rebukes and he instructs. And his rebuke is gentle. His rebuke is special. It's intimate. It's personal. His rebuke is to build us up and to grow us. And last week, I told a story of answered prayer. How many were here last week? Okay, good. It was answered prayer and fighting a forest fire. It was like, you know, it's actually a crazy story. And there was a lot I didn't share. But what I did share was pretty powerful and dynamic. And Lamar had told me to make it quick. I don't know what he was worried about, but he said, don't take too much time. Just tell what happened. And so I was quickly trying to kind of go through the highlights of it. And after I sat down, Janet mentioned the key to the whole thing. And I had missed saying that. I said it a little bit. There was a burden on my heart. I mentioned that. But she said, we need love for effective prayers. She said, Doran had to have a love for the land, for the trees, for the area, in order to sense the burden and in order to actually pray effectively. And that's the key. And I really do have a love for the land. We've lived several different places, in our lives, my wife and I, I'm talking about, and our kids. And I don't change citizenships or residencies. I just add to them. So I am a citizen and a resident of this place and of this place and of this place. And when I go back to visit, I feel it. I feel the land call to me. I love it. I love the closeness and experiences that I've had. And those don't go away. It's when I go back to visit or when I talk about it, I have a love for it. This was, in this case, it was Washington State. And that's what I was sensing when I was praying for the area. And there really was a love. And I'm glad that Janet mentioned that, because it's so easy to miss if we're talking about the details of it. Oh, pray this and the Lord says this and, you know, whatever. And it's so subtle, it's so soft, that we tend to miss it. And the title for the message today, I didn't prepare anything really. There's one slide you'll see later, but the title for the message is The Way of Love. So the invitation that the Lord has for you is to choose the way of love, because in every situation, there is the way of love. And I can be somewhat harsh in my approach to things because I like power. I like motorsports. I like full throttle. I don't like soft. Like if I'm going to hit it, I want to hit it as hard as it'll go. And that's what excites me. So the soft approach can be somewhat disappointing if that's all I think of is just, well, love is just soft. So I want to make this contrast for you so that you can actually discover where you're at. This is a mutual discovery this morning. So think of it and listen to the Lord as he shows you your own heart. I was thinking about prayer and the fact that Lamar had mentioned this, and the Lord reminded me of a word he gave me at Fire in the Hills this summer. And it was while 1 Corinthians 13 was being read, 1 Corinthians 13:13. And it was surprising to me because the guy that was, he was reading and I was looking in my Bible, actually in this Bible, the physical Bible pages, and he read, "And now abide faith, hope, love, these three, but the greatest of these is love." And as I was reading that, numbers appeared under the specific words, literally. And this is a physical page, and digital numbers appeared in my Bible. So I know the Lord was giving me a vision. And it was like, I looked at it and, you know, I'm like, I can't zoom in on that. I can't. It's pages. But I saw, this is what I saw. Faith, hope, love. And I shared this with some of you at the time. And I was trying to understand what this means, because it's not in order. And it doesn't even quite make sense, because it says, you know, the greatest of these is love, and yet it has a number three by it. It doesn't have a number one. And as I was meditating on this, the Lord spoke to me. And this is, it was very clear. He said, "I built you with hope. Okay. And I have given you faith. You will never lack for faith. But you still do not understand my love." That was his rebuke of me. And I felt it. I know it's true. I know that's what he was saying. It is time. And it wasn't a rebuke of like, you know, kick me saying you just can't get it. You're not getting it. He was telling me, it is now time for you to understand my love. So faith is a substance of things hoped for. So it has to begin with hope. If you don't have hope, you can't actually have faith, because it all stems from hope. So this is the progression that we get into the heart of the Father. Starts with hope, builds and creates faith. But without love, there's no power behind it. So love is the engine behind all of it. Love is the dominant power. I wrote this in my notes, and I wrote it in all caps. I must learn the Father's love if I want to pray for people for healing. Or if I want to pray for anything. If I don't know his love, I'm just trying to accomplish something. And it's in my own strength. I must learn the depth of his love in my core, in my heart. So I want to read, and I didn't want to put it up on the screen, because I don't want you just trying to follow along and just thinking in that way. I want you just to listen. I'm going to read 1 Corinthians 13, and I just want you to hear. I didn't prepare a lot of notes. I felt like the Lord said, take your time. Don't don't try to get somewhere. Just go through it. So I'm going to read 1 Corinthians 13. If I could speak all the languages of earth and of angels, this is in New Living Translation. All right, I'll start over. If I could speak all the languages of earth and of angels, but didn't love others, I would only be a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I had the gift of prophecy, and if I understood all of God's secret plans and possessed all knowledge, and if I had such faith that I could move mountains, but didn't love others, I would be nothing. If I gave everything I have to the poor and even sacrificed my body, I could boast about it. But if I didn't love others, I would have gained nothing. Love is patient and kind. Love is not jealous or boastful or proud or rude. It does not demand its own way. It is not irritable. And it keeps no record of being wronged. It does not rejoice about injustice, but rejoices whenever the truth wins out. Love never gives up, never loses faith, is always hopeful, and endures through every circumstance. Prophecy and speaking in unknown languages and special knowledge will become useless, but love will last forever. Now, our knowledge is partial and incomplete, and even the gift of prophecy reveals only part of the whole picture. But when the time of perfection comes, these partial things will become useless. When I was a child, I spoke and thought and reasoned as a child. But when I grew up, I put away childish things. Now we see things imperfectly, like blurry reflections in a mirror. But then we will see everything with perfect clarity. All that I know now is partial and incomplete, but then I will know everything completely, just as God now knows me completely. These three will last forever: faith, hope, and love. And the greatest of these is love. Now, do you know how many times we can listen to that and only understand part of it? I put this on repeat. I was changing oil in my truck. It's a short chapter. I don't know how many times I listened to that. I just played it over and over and over and over and over and over and over. And I could keep saying this because it was probably like 100 times. I just listened to it and listened to it. I wanna understand the depth of this. See, when we think of God's heart, we don't see the depth. We see what his heart has done. We feel what his heart has done in us, but it's a deep well. It's really deep. It's so deep you won't find the bottom of it. How deep is that? What's in there? The depth of God's heart. Now, when I was thinking about the first verse, I kept thinking about what we try to give to the world. We do this sharing with a guy that needs some help. He's sitting in the car next to you, and you know, that was a great story. We see someone loving another person and them responding. That's wonderful. But when we go out and we just go, well, I've got something for you, and I want you to hear this, and we do it with power, just with force, it becomes nothing. In fact, we could have the best thing in the world. In fact, if I would tell you, if there's anybody who really likes investments, okay, if I would say I have a guaranteed return on investment, guaranteed, I'm at 100% success and 100% return. So if you give me a dollar, I'll give you two. If you give me $1,000, I'll give you 2,000. If you give me $100,000, I'll give you 200,000. Guaranteed, immediately, I'll just hand it right to you. If you give me $1,000,000, I'll give you 2,000,000. How many would you give me? I mean, you're not very smart if you actually believe me and you don't give me everything, right? Because then you now have double. And then guess what you do? Give it to me again. I just stand there and just do this. Like, wouldn't take me long and I'd own the world. Because it's a guaranteed return on investment. Now, I actually did discover that. I want to show you. So, I know the youth kids like when I do little demonstrations, so I'm going to do a demonstration. Now, it's up to you to listen how I do this. Guaranteed, I'm going to give you something that it'll be 100% return. You just have to hear me, all right?
So, the way you do it is that all you have to do is you have to come up here and you can sit down.
Did anybody hear me? Nobody's doing what I said. Wow. There you go. All right. I will give it to you later. What I said is, I will give you the money in my wallet if you come up and give me something. I will return it. I'll give you. Now, Matt, your faith is pretty small. You gave me $1. That's all you got? I committed to giving. I didn't bring a huge amount. I was thinking maybe somebody will come up, and then I forgot to put it in my pocket. So it's in the office. But that's what I said. I said, if you come up and give me a 20, I guarantee you I will give you 20 out of my, or I'll give you my 20 and I'll give you yours back. I was really hoping I didn't have a lot of takers. But that was a return on investment. But you couldn't hear it. You there's no way you can tell what I'm saying. If I would say, I found the way to end all of world hunger.
And that's how you got all your energy, right, Bob?
I just ended world hunger and nobody did it. I mean, how many problems do we find in the world? We could end the war in Ukraine this way, huh? How many times I got to do this demonstration? We have the answer, but the answer is not getting to those who need the answer, because this is what we become. Because we're doing it without love. We have the right words, but they're not empowered by love. And so the world hears this. It's really loud for my ear. You guys think it's loud? It's loud. It's really loud. The world hears this from the church. And you know what they do? They go as far away as they can because they're not feeling love. They're not. They don't sense the true power that we need to be carrying. I'm going to move this. Oops. So I don't do that. The clanging cymbal. The other word that I had for that is annoying. So if I, you know, though I have all of these things and can do all these things, but don't have love, I become annoying. That's what we become to people. I've had a lot of conversations with people that have been hurt by Christians because Christians didn't understand not just the world's way of love, but God's love. See, there was a time, how many people in here, Bernie, I know you would classify this because you've talked about it, but the era of free love, right? The hippie era. I was born during that time, but I didn't experience it really. The world tried to experience love. But this is the difference. The love of the hippie era, The love that they were experiencing was all self-consumptive. It was for themselves. The love of God is all outward. See, the world has never experienced outward love. It's always inward love. It's always self-love. It's love to oneself. God says, I have such a river flowing in me of love, it can't come back to me. It can't, I can't consume it, I can only give it. That's what he has for us. He wants to be a river flowing through you. The love of God, this is where I'm like, I know this, but I don't know it. Like I have experienced his love. And those are the times that I've prayed for people and they just got healed right there. But how do we walk in it? How do we flow in it? How does the river actually just flow through us? I want to read the same verses again. I'm going to read them in New King James. I hesitated to start in King James or New King James or something that we're familiar with because we tend to pass over these words so quickly because we've probably memorized them. I mean, how many people have memorized 1 Corinthians 13? All right, we have a few. That was one of the things that I just, as a kid, I memorized a lot of verses. So though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not love, it's like, well, I can say the words, but what do they really mean? So again, I want you to listen to this. I'm not going to read the whole thing again, but I want you to hear this. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I have become sounding brass or clanging cymbal. I just demonstrated that. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith, so that I could remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, but have not love, it profits nothing. Listen to this, probably one of my favorite verses. Love suffers long and is kind. We're going to come back to that phrase. Love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself, is not puffed up, does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not provoked. Woo! How many of you can be provoked? Whew! Thinks no evil. When something happens, do you think evil of the person or the? In fact, we just, Vinny, you mentioned a situation. We have a current situation. Boom. Do you think evil of her? Thinks no evil. Does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. Bears all things, believes all things. This, listen to the words, all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Now, when I read this, this just seems so, when I try to become practical with this, this is what I think. Bears all things. Okay, so how far? Believes all things. How gullible? Like how? Okay. When do we stop just doing that? Hopes all things. At what point do you go, well, I can't hope anymore? Endures all things. The word all is all inclusive. When I try to make sense of it, I come to roadblocks in my heart. I just hit these roadblocks because I am a logical person. I like, you know, thinking through it and coming up to a logical conclusion and making sense of it and then applying that. You can't do that with love. It doesn't make sense. It isn't logical. It doesn't protect itself. What did Jesus do when he was before the Sanhedrin, When they came up to him and spit in his face, have you ever been spit in the face? Anybody ever had somebody spit in your face? Oh, I don't know if I could keep my hand from moving. Like, I'd want to slap them. But not if I love them, not the way Jesus does. The soldiers actually punched him in the face. He was so bruised and beaten that you couldn't, he was so disfigured that you couldn't recognize him. He was beaten to a pulp. And he didn't protect himself. And it seems like at what point is it enough? Well, he went all the way to the cross. And even on the cross, after all of that, after they had just destroyed him physically, he said, "Don't hold this against him, Father." He loved the ones who had beaten him so much that he said, "They don't know what they're doing. It's okay. It's okay." The reason is he knows something deeper. There's a deeper truth. There's in the Message of Narnia, there's a deeper magic. There's something there's an undertone that they can't hear, and he hears it. There's something stronger. And that's what I experience when I'm experiencing the love of the Father. We sang a song. It's one of my favorite songs of sitting before the Lord. I want to sit at his feet, drink from the cup in your hand. It's sung to him. Lay back against you and breathe. Feel your heart beating. This love is so deep. It's more than I can stand. I melt in your peace. It's overwhelming. See, when you've not taken time to sit in the presence of the Lord, to sit either at his feet or sit in his lap, lay back against him and breathe, just breathe. Hear his heart beating. You can go out and try to save the world. You can go out and pray for people. You can do all kinds of cool things for him and not be empowered by him because you haven't encountered him. And so his rebuke to me is not that I've never done it, not that I've not experienced it, but it's not a guaranteed thing just that once you experience his presence one time, now go save the world. It's the life flow. The invitation is to continually do this. Do this all the time. Encounter him, and he will lead you into places of ministry. He will lead you to places where you can't not do it. You'd be compelled to do it by love. And when you're compelled to do it by love, there's more power than more than you need. And the love of God will accomplish what he's put on your heart. When I read 1 Corinthians 13, I feel like it's written actually so clearly. It's not like he's going, discover the undiscoverable. He's not saying, you know, words that are strange and you got to sort of figure it out. He just says it. Love does this. Love bears all things. Does not behave rudely. He says those words. It's like, I can easily apply those. So this is not something that's just this such a hidden trap of words that you go, I just don't know how we can get there. If we look at it, I go, how's it written so clearly and yet we miss it so easily? How do I miss it so easily? This is the conclusion that I came to, because I'm the most important person in my life. If not, then I would see other people more clearly than I see myself. So I'm standing up here in repentance, changing my thinking right in front of you. I'm going, I do it with me. Come on. This is part of the fun of learning. Who's the most important? Who's the most important person in your life, especially when you hurt yourself? I mean, and I'm not blaming anyone. I've been there and I'm there. And I need this all the time. I need this encouragement. I need to see beyond myself, especially when I'm hurting, especially when something has happened. So in your life, think of the circumstances surrounding your life and how, as it gets closer and closer to your heart and your core and what you believe strongly or what you desire, and those things, they get louder and louder and louder as you get closer to you. That means the things important to you are the most important things to you. When you think of other people in the presence of the Lord and you sense the river flow of His love going out, the further out it gets, the louder it gets. The more you see the other people and sense the Lord, the more you actually feel His heart for them and not for yourself. Can you feel it? Can you feel the flow instead of self-consumptive and inward? It's going outward. It's the river of His love going out to those around you. I think we just tend to overlook anything that doesn't have immediate, physical, and visible power associated with it. I mean, if I could just light a firecracker and you'd see the explosion, boom, that's power. If I could demonstrate immediate power of something, then you go, ooh, that's good. That's something that we want. I like that. That's why I like engines and throttles. Because you push the throttle, it's going to go. And I like the response of that. Even these guys who drive cars with no engines, they drive cars with little drill motors on the tires and it's all electric. And boy, they go. How fun is that? You got an immediate response. I've tested them, actually. It's the go button. So that's what we value, because there's a quick response. When we do something and there's no response, no feedback of response, we tend to dismiss it and walk away. How many times have you tried the love of God and seen no response and said, well, I guess I don't know. It doesn't work. It didn't do anything. I want to tell you a story of a couple people that have demonstrated this, and they're, I think of them when I think of someone that who understands the love of God. My brother, Marlon, is one of them. It's almost annoying to me how loving he is. Like, how can you do that? But I won't say all of his stories, but his in raising his kids, I mean, it's just normal kids. They do stuff against their dad. All right. And this story happened. They live in South Carolina, so they were here and it had snowed and they love just messing around in the snow. And I'm standing there talking to my brother. And as I'm talking to him, I mean, a snowball just bashes him in the ear. I mean, it was not just a little, like, you know, whatever. It was thrown by a teenage boy. And they don't know. They don't have scruples. They don't know how to. They just go all in. Well, it just smashed him in the ear, in the back of his head, kind of right there. And he never even turned to look. How do you do that? I mean, my son would have had his face in the snow and I'd have thrown him in a drift and I'd have been like, how's that feel, boy? And we kept talking. We're having this conversation and he continued. He did not break his conversation. He continued the thought while it melted and ran inside his shirt. I couldn't remember what we were talking about because all I'm looking at is the snow. Like, how do you do that? But he has demonstrated this love so amazingly. And he's a tough guy. He really is. He was always the most athletic. And I'm like, he could have literally just jumped over me and gone and attacked his son. I look up to him. I look up to his, that to me is powerful. To be able to pound his son and not do it is more powerful than to do it. I know that that's the way it is. And yet I get provoked. And I have kids who will attest to that. And so I want to learn. I want to show them a better way. See, Paul says, but now I show you a better way. This is a better way. The other story I want to tell you is, it's not as funny as that, but it is amazingly powerful. There was a guy that years and years ago had gotten into sin, and he had actually abused some of the boys under his care. And so this is a bad story, really bad. And he ended up getting AIDS. He ended up going into this sort of prison. He couldn't leave because he was so sick. And they told him when he got in there that no one ever leaves this place. He was diagnosed with AIDS with dementia. Imagine what that is. That's like double worse. And he was so without hope. He was so depressed. I mean, he just wanted to die. He literally just, there was nothing left in life. He had lost his family. He had lost everything. He had nothing left but a disease-riddled body and he had turned his back on the Lord. He actually tried to do everything he could think of that would make God mad. So I don't know what all he did, but I don't think there was anything off limits. If he thought it would make God mad, he did it. So one of the boys that he had abused years later, 20 some years later, as a man, found out where this guy was at in Pennsylvania and went to visit him. And this is like a 6-hour drive or something to go visit. And he went to visit. And when he went, it was like a dorm with a bunch of these inmates in there. And when he walked in there, this guy was sitting on his bed and he looked back and just a string of curse words were thrown at this guy. I mean, it's just right out of the first thing, his first response was just cursing him. Get out of here. I don't want to see you. I hate you. I don't want anything to do with you. And this guy comes walking over, the young man, or he's not young anymore at that point, but he comes over and he sits next to him on his bed. And the guy that had abused him turns his back to him and just cusses, just cursing the whole time. He sat there for, I think it was a couple hours. No response, no connection. And ended up, he had to leave and go home, and he got up and he left. Nothing was spoken. No restoration at all. And the next week, he went back and did it again. Every weekend, every Saturday, he drove there. Walked in the room, got cursed at, sat next to this guy, stood up and went home. How do you do that? There's no response. It's not working. Do you understand? He wasn't doing it for a response. He was all outward. He was doing it to give. He didn't need anything back. True, agape love doesn't need a response. He didn't go in there with a hole needing filled. It was already filled. It was so filled, he had such a river flowing out. It was simply to give. So then, after about I forget how many times. Half a dozen times, so a month and a half. It was something like that. There was a response, a little bit of a, why do you keep doing this? And he said, because I love you and I want you to know God loves you. Curse words, all this stuff, da 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 da. He ended up going, visiting enough times that this guy, who was told no one ever leaves this facility, through just sitting next to him, wasn't there praying, I'm going to pray for healing over you, I'm going to pray for restoration, nothing of that. Just sitting next to him, gets healed of AIDS. They do some tests and they go, well, it's actually not there. And your mental shift is so complete that you don't need to be here. Not only do you not have AIDS, you don't have dementia. So you may as well leave. No one's ever left that facility, and yet he left. Simply by someone visiting and loving all outward. Now, I love that story because there actually is an answer. There's a result. It actually did work. So I'm kind of rolling my eyes with that because here I am again looking for the answer. But we should have this heart of all outward. Let the heart of the Father flow. I was thinking about people that I've interacted with over the years. This is through doing street ministry or prison ministry or whatever, because I've done a lot of that. I actually want to. I want to go and talk to the person that needs what God has, that needs what I have. But the times that have been most effective is when there's been something about them that I've had to overlook. It could be a guy on the street that really smells like BO or something. Like, it's like, how do you get close to somebody who you got to catch your breath when you, the closer you get? Get close. How do you respond to someone? What did Jesus do when he met a leper? Did he go 6 feet separation? Sorry, I didn't know. Anyway, did he go stay away? No, he gave them a hug. Someone with a disease that you don't touch, he walked up to them and embraced them because he knew that the power in him was so complete and so powerful, it was flowing into them and not from them into him. If someone is sick and you have you're flowing in the power, the love of God, you won't hold back because they can't affect you. You affect them. It's what I desire. And really, it's what I hope you desire. I hope you get this, the mystery of the love of God, the beauty of it, the joy of it. See, if there was no love in the world, if there was no connection, everything we would have would be sterile. It wouldn't actually have much meaning. If, like, there's relationships in this room, there's connections and friendships and families and whatever. The relationships we have are what make it worth it. If you had no relationship with the person next to you, the person that you know really well, if you had no relationship, you wouldn't sit next to them every time. It'd be just sterile. It'd be like an airplane. You just get on, and whoever you sit next to, you hope you don't sit next to that guy. Well, I just sat next to a guy on an airplane a few weeks ago, and I was uncomfortable, not just because of him, but just where I was at, and the air conditioning wasn't working on the plane, and I mean, we sat waiting to take off for a while, so everything was really hot, and I was just like, I'm going to get a different seat. And the Lord said, I put you here. And this guy had sat next to me, and we ended up having a wonderful conversation, and I shared one thing with him that was, I felt the love of God toward it with the comments that I made, and ended up listening to him the whole time, just as he told his stories in the business world of having to go in and fire people, and his, like, he meets with a lot of people who are mad at him, and he needed someone just to love him and listen, because all he had experienced was just this. It was like, you have to go home and take a shower from the conversations you just had. It's so toxic. And yet the Lord put me next to him so that he could experience something relational with someone he doesn't know, but sensing this relationship from the Lord. Love suffers long and is kind. I want you to remember that. It's funny because Vinny, you actually started out in Isaiah. I'm going to look this up here. Isaiah 42. Did you notice? And you read out a New Living Translation, right? Okay. He says, look at my servant whom I strengthen. He is my chosen one who pleases me. I have put my spirit upon him, and he will bring justice to the nations. Now listen, he will not shout or raise his voice in public. He will not crush the weakest reed or put out a flickering candle. Flickering candle, a nearly dead candle. He will not crush the weakest reed. What's that? A reed is, you know, it's like it has a little structure to it in order to stand up straight. And if it's been crushed, it wants to fall over. And he takes something that you'd think, what's the point? He won't crush it. The weakest reed, he'll protect it. He will bring justice to all who have been wronged. And I read this and I think, obviously, this is Jesus. But how does Jesus do that now? He's put his spirit in us. And through you, he will not crush the weakest reed. The person who is the most vulnerable, he will not crush through you. He will not put out the flickering candle. Someone who literally has no hope. They're so hopeless, their life is literally flicking. They don't even know if they want to live. That's the person he wants you to go meet with so that you can restore them, so that he can restore them through you. The river of his love flowing through your heart. This is how he does his work. The power of love is so complete and so enduring that no matter what the situation is, love will always win. Always. So if you don't like what the circumstances of what this lady just did and all that stuff, then go love people. Go love people despite the devil. Go undo what he did by loving. It's the answer. I know it's the answer. And I'm pressing in. I'm going to spend time in his presence. This is my commitment to you and to him. I'm going to take time In the weeks following this, to sit at his feet and learn, understand, and allow his heart to be formed in me. Allow it to flow through me. And it's my challenge to you as well. Do this. You can't do it without being in his presence. It's pointless. I mean, plainly simple, pointless. Remember that. Every time you want to go and just solve it with power, just remember that you're annoying. I need that message right there, because I can be annoying just by giving the right answer. So I did that probably as much for myself as anybody. I want to read Colossians 3, verses 12 through 15. And I'm actually going to read them in two translations again, just because I like how it's worded just a little differently. It gives a little more understanding. Therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, put on tender mercies, kindness, humility, meekness, long-suffering, bearing with one another, and forgiving one another. If anyone has a complaint against another, even as Christ forgave you, so you also must do. But above all these things, put on love, which is the bond of perfection. And let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to which also you were called in one body. And be thankful. I like how he ends it. That's how to live. You want to know how to bring unity to the church? That's how you do it. Listen to this in the New Living. Colossians 3, verse 12. Since God chose you to be the holy people he loves, you must clothe yourselves with tender-hearted mercy, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Make allowance for each other's faults and forgive anyone who offends you. Whew. Remember, the Lord forgave you, so you must also forgive others. Above all, clothe yourselves with love, which binds us all together in perfect harmony. And let the peace that comes from Christ rule in your hearts. For as members of one body, you are called to live in peace and always be thankful. I want to take some time here at the end to just, in fact, if you guys could come up. There you guys are. I'm like looking for Madison. If you could sing that song, I Want to Sit at Your Feet. And you can just play, do whatever. But I'd like to invite you guys to come up front. If you sit in the same place you're at, you haven't made enough of a change to show that you're serious. It's not that there's more anointing up here. It's to change your perspective for yourself. You can come sit on some of these chairs. Just move. Do something and go, I'm going to encounter the Lord in a different place than I've been sitting this service. And you encounter him. If you want someone to pray with you, just ask someone to pray with you. Look around you. Do you know that the Lord is in each one of us? If you're born again, the Lord is in each one of us, and he wants to minister to you through other people. There was a time where I was up during worship. I was standing up here and the Lord spoke to me. He said, "Do you see me?" And I was standing there and I was like looking up in the corner for lights or something, or, you know, he said, "Do you see me?" And I said, no. I don't see anything. And he said, "I'm 6 feet tall." JB was up here playing. He said, "I'm 6 feet tall." And I looked up and I saw JB, and the Lord goes, "It's me." Then he said, "Do you see me? I'm 5 foot two." And I looked over and one of the youth girls was standing right there and he goes, "It's me." And he said, he started saying specific things about the people around me. "I'm this, I'm that, I'm this, I'm that. It's me. Do you see me?" And I looked around and I saw him in us. I saw him. I saw the Lord. And I realized how many times I was going to try not to cry. I don't know why. I realized how many times I look at people and I don't see him. I see them with their faults and their failures, with their things that I'm better at than they are. And I compare. Or I see something that a mistake they've made, or I don't see him. How many times have you looked at people and you've seen the Lord? And he says, it's me. Could you guys all stand? If we could just turn these lights off in the front here, not necessarily the stage lights, I guess, but just, I don't want it to be a thing of like, if it's, no one's on the in the spotlight, no one's being forced to do something. This is an invitation to come to the Lord, encounter him, let him speak to you, look around you and ask him, Lord, I want to see you in that person. Do other people see you in me? I want to encounter you, Lord. So in whatever position you want to get into, let's just take whatever time and let's encounter the Lord.